And you go along with it, right?
Pro you.
Well, just like Amazon, if you put in a thing.
Well, any of us, too.
Just like a citizen.
A citizen person.
That I'm gonna see if, how we start with this one.
So I'm doing okay? Sorry, I did.
Saturday, and on Sunday, she has a meeting.
So I think we'll go ahead and get going, call the meeting to order.
Betsy.
So, can I have the approval for the minutes of October 9th? Is there a second?
Second.
Any comments or clarifications, edits? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, opposed? Any public comments? I don't have any comments at this point, so we'll go right to the presentations. Guess we're starting with medically assisted treatment services.
Yep. Hi, everyone, my name's Betsy Smith. I just ran up and made a few more copies. Did anybody not get a copy of the PowerPoint? That we need one? Awesome. First of all, I'd like to give, acknowledge Dr. Gwen Perry-Bry and Kira Kraus, who were instrumental in starting the medication assisted treatment program. We actually first got our first clients a year ago in February of 2016, I think is when we first started our lab work and getting clients. I came into the program earlier this year. It was the very end of January, start of February, and I continue to work with Amanda Tura and Gianna Ventura, who are the public health nurses who give the injections to the clients. The brief, just to kind of backtrack a little bit, how the program works is that we get a referral. It's a public-private partnership with Prevention Services Group. They do the counseling aspect of it, the outpatient treatment, and we do the medication with the injection. They do a multidimensional assessment, which is looking at their prior history of drug use or substance use, and any mental health or other diagnoses they may have. And then we do initial labs on them. It's pretty extensive. We do hepatitis B and C. We do syphilis. We do chlamydia and gonorrhea. And then we do looking at a complete metabolic panel, looking for their liver function enzymes, because that is important to know what those are, and then a complete blood count. They need to be opiate-free for 7 to 10 days. Vivitrol can be used for both alcohol and opiate dependence. And then they get an injection every 28 days, and they go with individual counseling with PSG, both, and then as group counseling. So Vivitrol works. It's an opioid blocker. So this blocks the effect of the brain being rewarded when they use opioids. And it's that pleasure that can lead often to addiction. And it, as I said, it can also be used for treating alcohol dependence. You can't be in the program if you're still actively using or currently in withdrawal, which is why we ask them to be opiate-free for 7 to 10 days. If you're pregnant or breastfeeding, or if you're allergic to the medication itself. Obviously, we can't use it. So why do we care? This is a graph of our toxicity deaths. 2016, we went up to 54 currently. This is as of October. We have 42 toxicities. 14 are pending. If all of these turn out to be positive, we're going to be above our count for last year. The other thing to note is that in 2016, we had 6 toxicities that were related to fentanyl. This year we've had 14, and I just learned this morning that we have a unique analog that hasn't been seen elsewhere. I don't know, in the state or in the county, but in the area. I was speaking to Debbie Ruber, who is a co-chair with Patty Hall, our medical examiner, and she said she had just learned we have a new unique analog, which is, you know, it's important to be first in a lot of things, but this is not one of the areas that we like to be first in. This is an overview of how many injections we've given to the end of October. The lower bars are the number of initial lab work that we do each month, and then the follow-up lab work. And this matters because, so the dark bar, this is our initial lab work. So remember, as we said, I said we did like 6 or 7 initial labs. We do a follow-up every 3 months to make sure that their liver is still functioning correctly. And so that's a much shorter time commitment, because we just do the complete metabolic panel and the complete blood count. So that's just the quick lab draw. The number of injections, you may be wondering, wow, they're doing so good, and now they're dropping off. Well, this is actually great news. This is because we've had 15 completions or graduations over the time period. And so as you can see, we have a lot of new initial labs next month. As soon as people graduate, we have openings, and new people are coming on board. I have to say that trying to figure out how to promote our successes in the data, it's kind of like this, it's like, I guess, herding butterflies or something. It's this ever-moving target. So this graph shows, it's just a snapshot looking at the past month, the number, what number of injection they're on. Remember when the program began, we thought we would give them injections for 6 months? It turns out that most clients are more successful if they get injections up to 12 months. And so you can see there's a number of people who are already beyond that 6 month injection and heading towards the goal of the 12 months, and it's extinction of their craving of the substance. We have three referral sources. I believe that when Amanda and Kira talked to you last year, we were just getting referrals from the detention center, Kenosha County Detention Center, and from the community. Clients from the detention center are great because we know that they've been drug-free, right? They've been locked up and haven't had access, ideally, to any kind of drug. Community clients have to be a little bit more self-strong, self-reliant, because they would have access, but you have to be opioid-free 7 to 10 days. And then now, since Gwen helped me out, is it like February, March, we started with the DA diversion program? I think it was right around early 2017. We started out with the DA diversion program. And this is a program where the DA, with somebody as a first-time offender, will offer them the program that if they participate, getting the injections for 12 months, and then they have a 12-month probation period after that, their charge will not appear on their record. It's not that it's expunged, it will never have been there, and so that will ideally give them the opportunity to lead a full and productive life without having the felon charge on their record.
So their arrests, they won't be charged?
Right.
Okay, the arrest will disappear?
The whole thing is history. Well, it's non-existent history. Thank you. It's hard to, like, say that succinctly. So where are we right now? So the community alcohol and drug dependence treatment program, that's our KCDC and our community referrals. They've had 273 referrals. We've provided intakes to 100, well, we, PSG has provided intakes to 141, completing 111 multidimensional assessments. We have an average of about 50, 55 clients currently in the program each month. So, which come both from the community and from the DA diversion program. So of these 111, 85 have received injections, and kind of just a general picture of who are the clients. Two-thirds of them are men. It's an average age of 36, an average use of 10 years of substance use. And it's really important to note this dual diagnosis, 75% of mental health history or diagnosis.
What happened to the other 130 referrals that didn't get services?
From us?
Well, 273 referrals and 141 got served.
Right. I don't know what happens to them. Sometimes they self-select out. Sometimes it's people aren't ready yet to engage. Some people just can't stop using. It is. It's a lot of numbers. So this is where it's hard to provide, to say, like, this is successful, this is not successful. A lot of people will be like, well, 50%, you know, what happened to them? So to answer that question, to go off on an aside, we are looking to expand the wraparound treatment that we do, and we did get a small grant, not as much as we applied for, a STAR grant, which would provide Suboxone treatment to a certain degree. So yes, there's a lot more need out there. Absolutely spot on. So what have we found out from this? We have all the 85 people who got the injections. So you're right, we started out with 273, only a half qualified, 111 we said yes to, 85 have got the injections. 91% have not recidivated. 88% have stable housing, 80% are employed or were employed and discharged from our program. Our number of positive substance use for opiates and alcohol is very low, which is a good thing. This is not to say clients are completely hooked. They're still using other substances. It's kind of like this balance between harm reduction and having them be completely substance free. But they do, a majority of them are reporting greater than a 50% reduction in cravings. Of course, if that cravings go down, then the desire to use go down. So this is what the community and the KCDC clients. The DA diversion program, we've had 27 be referred, 17 have been provided services. Picture similar, except there's more women in this program. Sorry, this is differs in the number. Remember, it was 2/3 men on the other program, 3/4 women in this program. Average age of 31, average use 86.8, and then again, about 3/4 have a mental health diagnosis, which is a great unmet need in our community, and I would say our country as a whole. Again, a very low percentage positive for opiates. The majority have reported significant reduction in cravings and a lot of good outcomes in terms of employment and housing. So both programs are working well for the people who decide to engage and participate. Additional things that the medicated assisted treatment team is doing. Amanda and Gianna, remember there are public health nurses, were invited to present at the International Nursing Society of Addiction. They did this in Orlando. We had a room full of people eager to ask questions. They were very interested in this program and the outcomes that we're having. And then in November, Amanda and myself participated with Rebecca Swanson is the nurse practitioner at the detention center. Amy Allen is the medical director of the clinic director there. Javon Clausen works with the she's a program services person. She's the liaison for when the clients are being discharged and going out. But since February of 2016, we have been doing an SDI clinic there. So on Wednesdays, we go out to the detention center. We do the initial lab draws for the Vivitrol programs. And then if there's still space available, we've been testing for chlamydia and gonorrhea. And our outcomes with that clinic is that we've tested around 300 people. There's an overall positive infection chlamydia rate of 16, but when you break that by 6%, when you break it by gender, you can see the women are 15 to 16% positive chlamydia. We're able then to treat both the chlamydia and the gonorrhea before they're released into the community. CDC, I think in 2016, the highest risk group was the 20 to 24 year olds. Men were an average of 1.5% positive for chlamydia, women 3%, so you can see this rate is very high, and definitely a very at-risk group that needs to be screened, tested, and treated. Other things we're doing, we're providing medication lock boxes. These are really popular. We're unable to keep up with the demand. They're currently on back order. We'll get some more in Thanksgiving. For about the past year and a half, we've also had a grant that helps us with Narcan education and distribution. We've been doing agency training. We've trained 5 police departments. We've had 5 official saves. We've heard there's another one out there that the people have not returned the paperwork. And we're moving into a train-the-trainer approach where we'll go and train agencies and they in turn will train people so that we can get as much Narcan out there as we can. Again, February, March of this year, 2017, Patty Hall and Debbie Ruber started the Kenosha County Opioid Task Force that meets monthly, and we continue to meet doing the self-harm and death analysis team so we can see what really is being the cause of the adult deaths in our community. And that's a lot of information. Questions?
Any questions?
How much does it cost to administer the Vivitrol?
I think we estimated the cost of treatment to be between $6,000 and $10,000, depending on if they have, am I getting that number right?
Over a 6-month period of time?
Yeah.
$1,000 a month?
Yeah,
that's a good average.
Roughly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The cost of an autopsy is $33,000, I hope they know that. And the cost of incarceration is a lot higher also. So.
Very effective program.
It is a very effective program. We're very excited to see the success that we've had. Other questions? Yeah.
Going off of what Dr. Gerlach said, are we doing any kind of information gathering to find out why people are not being able to enter the program? Do we have categories where we're getting the data to know that it's self-referral, that they're not ready versus they aren't eligible because of X, Y, or Z? Or, you know, do we have any kind of data to show why they're not coming in?
Chris Schoen, who's the head of PSG, and I spoke briefly, we meet with them monthly and do staffing, and he said that they were collecting data on that information, but we haven't met yet since then. I'm also curious why people will get through, like, what are the reasons for people not completing on to the 6 mm-hmm. or 12 month injection? Sometimes it's they get incarcerated again mm-hmm. for whatever reason, maybe related, maybe not related. Sometimes it's just that they're not actively engaged. We have a number of clients who we've given 2 to 3 opportunities to, and if they're not participating, it doesn't, the information we have is that it has to be a both end. You have to get the medication and you have to be engaged in the individual and group therapy. And when it becomes clear that they're either coming up positive for substance use or they're not coming to their appointments, or they always have a reason for why they can't make their appointments, then the team decides whether or not they're going to continue. So, but that's good. It would be good to begin gathering that data so we can see how we can meet those gaps.
Other questions? Okay,
thank you.
We'll go on to the Women's Infants Children.
Hi, so my name is Pam Halbach and I'm the WIC director, and today I'm just going to give you an overview of some of the things that we've been up to the past year. A big part of what we're doing the next couple of months is with outreach. The state, both the state WIC program and the National WIC Association, has asked us with remaining dollars to do an outreach campaign. WIC participation statewide, nationally, is down, so they're also looking at the service model too and see if there's any updating that needs to occur there. So. We are working with Dooley and Associates to do an outreach campaign, and the first part of it is billboards. So this is our first one that really just talks about WIC and healthy food and so much more. And so much more really is that WIC also, besides direct services, also does a lot of referrals. And just in the month of October, staff provided 156 referrals to other entities to get them to link up with those services too. We have a teaching kitchen, and between January of this year to now, we've had 1,254 children participate in activities in the teaching kitchen. Our caseload has been fluctuating between 3,500 and 3,700 a month. So when the depression was several years ago, our all-time high was 4,200 a month. So been some fluctuation there. This billboard is actually on Sheridan and 52nd and Sheridan and 35th Street too. So if you're in the area, you want to check it out. The next one is really on breastfeeding promotion and support. Unfortunately, some people still know us just as the formula company or the place where people go and get formula, but we're really trying to change that image too, that we spend a lot of time to really promote and support breastfeeding. We have a peer counselor on staff that really does mom-to-mom support. One of the nice things about her hours too is that she's available during evening hours too and by text, and that's been real popular. We also have an IBCLC on staff, and all the dietitians have advanced training in breastfeeding too. And we are at our all-time high. Our incidence of breastfeeding is 77.4% now. So, and we're at or above state level for everything except for exclusivity for the first 6 months. And this billboard is on 39th Avenue and 67th Street. And then prenatal services. There again, besides the pregnancy certification where they receive nutrition counseling, we also do height and weight checks to check their hemoglobin. And this is also a time where we do the breastfeeding education and support as well as infant feeding. So far this year, we have referred 626 pregnant women to the health department for either NFP or PNCC2. And then also the nurses are on site now too, working and engaging the parents. So that's been real positive. This billboard is actually on 52nd and 37th Avenue and 30th and Washington Road. One of the programs unique to Kenosha is that we also provide programming for our dads too, for father engagement. It came out of the Life Course Initiative to look at ways to reduce infant mortality, particularly among the African Americans. So Charmaine Harris is our father involvement coordinator and has been doing quite a bit of different programming with dads. So besides engaging them in the WIC program and encouraging them to come to the appointments, he also does some specific fatherhood programming. One that's really taken off, it's called Dedicated Dads One-on-One. He works with 35 first-time dads and engages them in conversations and goal setting every month for the full year. And what's been successful with that is not only are they meeting their goals, but the ultimate goal is to make sure they're engaged in their child's life after that 1 year. And last year, all but one dad was still actively engaged in the life of their children. That one, so we're happy with those results. He's also doing, it's called Dedicated Dads Online, trying to reach dads in different ways through technology. And by the end of this month, we should have 6 of those videos. What they do then is they watch the video, they answer a series of questions, and then he connects with them that way, and then tries to invite them into some of the other programming that's going on. We're using the Nurturing Father curriculum. It's an evidence-based curriculum. And he has what they're called the power hours, too, where dads can come in. We have a morning class and an evening class, too. So that's the area that's been the most difficult because it's a 13-week curriculum, and trying to get people to commit to those 13 weeks has been a little difficult. In the process of, since this is our third year now, I'm in the process of writing an evaluation paper, too, on just what this has looked like for the WIC families, too. So I'm certainly welcome to share that with anybody if they're interested. The other thing we're trying to do is use technology to reach our families and keep them engaged. So our project piloted the WIC app, and as of last week, 64,000 downloads in the state have occurred with this app too. So families are finding it really useful, not only to find out what's on their card yet, what's remaining for their benefits, but they can also search the WIC foods to see if they're WIC approved. Part of the frustration has always been that they go to the store, they go through the checkout lane, and then they're told that something isn't WIC approved, and they hold up the line, and it's just embarrassing, and then they ultimately choose not to participate anymore. Well, now they can just scan the barcode of the food, and it'll tell them not only if it's WIC approved, but if it's WIC approved for them too. So that's been helpful. And we can also send out some messaging through the app as well. We just finished piloting for the state the phase 2, and that will roll out next week. And this too, then we'll get their appointment reminder sent to them too. And it also will allow them to do customer satisfaction surveys too, so we can find out how we're doing too. We'll be able to run that information weekly then too. And it provides some links too to other services. We have an app called Cofective that we're working with and working with hospitals on too, so that we're all having the same conversation with our families. And the nice thing about this app, it's for different family members too. So there's one section that's for fathers, there's one section for moms, one section for grandparents, and one section for health providers too. And then the last happened, we almost are feeling like sometimes our families are getting apped out because it seems to be the new thing and we're providing more and more apps. But this app we created to really encourage our families to use their farmer market checks. Clients receive farmer market checks from July through October of every year, and the redemption rate has been historically low, anywhere from 40% to 50%. So the response has always been a lot of times is like they didn't know where to go. So we're hoping with this app that that will help them because it gives the location, it gives the payment options, and it also has the Google Maps attached to it too. So it rolled out later in the season, so when we got the results from UW Parkside with the group that we were working with, it wasn't very impressive. So we're gonna try again next year to see if it is effective or not. Any questions or comments on that?
Any questions? Thank you. Otherwise, the clinical services update.
Hi, I'm Diane Bozovich, and I'm here to present Nurse of the Day or NOD services for 2017. I wanted to talk about who's on our team. Kira Kraus is the team leader for the NOD of the Day services. I'm working primarily at the Wellness Center, which is located above the WIC office. Dawn Bruce Ernst is the primary nurse for the Job Center site here, and Beth Carroll is at the site for the Kenosha County Center, which is Highway 450. Elizabeth Clay and Aaron Owens are the public health techs who primarily work here at the Job Center site, but are part of our team as well. We have walk-in services at the NOD clinics. The Job Center is open Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. The Wellness Center above the WIC office is Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 3:30. And then the KCC Center is open Monday through Thursday, Monday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Tuesday 7 a.m. to 5 p.m., and both of those days she closes an hour for lunch from 12 to 1, and Wednesday and Thursday are mornings 7 a.m. to 12 p.m. The NOD services that we provide to the public are health education, immunization services for all ages, pregnancy testing, which can also include, if they are pregnant, is signing them up for express enrollment. If they're not pregnant and they qualify, we can also sign them up for family planning only services. We do walk-in birth control counseling and provide supplies if needed. We do blood pressure monitoring, childhood lead testing, which primarily is the finger stick or capillary samples. But I do lead cases, for the high lead cases, and when they need to get retested, if they don't have a provider, they can come to me for venous blood testing. We do TB skin testing, dental varnish fluoride application, which can be done up to 4 times a year for high-risk children, laboratory testing, which is select blood and urine testing, and well child exams, and those are done only at the Wellness Center location. Section 317 federal vaccine funding started October 1st, 2012. And they updated the vaccination guidelines at that time. And it restricted use of federally funded vaccines to only VFC-eligible children. Insured children are to be referred to their private providers for immunizations.
Do you turn them away?
No, we will provide, at this time, we are providing the services that they present to us. But we will direct them to go to their provider for future immunizations.
Because we do get a lot of people that, it's too much of a copay, or insurance doesn't cover it enough, but I'm going to go to the health department, and I try and tell them they're not supposed to be doing it. Well, they'll give it to me. So unless somebody puts their foot down, it's not going to change.
I think that's coming about, and we are seeing that more. I'm not saying having to. I find that I'm not having to say it as much once I've told someone. Mm-hmm. I don't see them coming back that often. So I don't know about the other sites. Who is VFC eligible? Children through 18 years of age who are Medicaid eligible, who are uninsured, American Indian or Alaska Native, and underinsured, which means they have health insurance, but the coverage does not include all vaccines. Previously, the gold standard, our primary service was immunizations. The impact of the 317 changes is that the total number of immunizations given in 2012, you can see 5,855. In 2017, is 2,196. Those numbers go up through September 30th. We haven't included this last quarter yet. And that's a decrease of 62% of vaccines given in 2012 to present. Community partners also are administering flu vaccines. Pharmacists, visiting nurses, Costco and Sam's, sometimes at a significantly lower cost. The flu vaccine in 2013, you can see our numbers, and 2014 all the way up to 2017. And you can see the significant decrease in 2017, that we're less than half of what we used to do. A decrease of 69% of flu vaccines given in 2013 as compared to present. And the 2017 numbers only reflect up through September 30th.
I think people are losing faith in the flu vaccine. Because this year we're still having a lot of, no, I'm not going to get it.
It's a hard sell. And I don't know if, when I talk to parents primarily, if they don't take it seriously, I don't think they take it seriously because their children are healthy, they just don't think of their children as, if they get it, they're not going to get it sick, and I hear that feeling.
There's so much stuff on social media against it.
It doesn't work.
Some for it, a lot against it.
I always find it interesting that the people who've had the flu are very for it.
Well, once I think anyone has experienced actually having what is the real flu and not what they perceive as being flu disease, they realize how serious it is.
Yeah, they think gastroenteritis is flu. Yeah.
We also provide prevention services and tests, and in 2017, these are our numbers. We did 430 TB skin tests. This again, these numbers reflect up through September 30th. We did 487 DNA tests or genetic testing, 55 dental varnish applications, 51 lead tests, 78 well child checks, and 270 birth control methods, thank you, which include the Depo, Provera, Ring, NuvaRing, and pills that were provided to clients. I don't know, it wasn't on there, so I wasn't sure if that included that number or not. 200 pregnancy tests, and as I said, we haven't included the last quarter in those numbers yet. That will possibly change. We've done 242 blood pressures that we have taken. And forensic urine collection, 5,486. That includes for the 12 panel, 3,583, and for alcohol testing, 1,903. That's it. Thank you. Do you have any questions?
Why are you doing alcohol? You're an alcoholist. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes.
Why are we doing those?
These are court-ordered tests, and it depends on what the court has ordered for them to be tested for.
So
it could be for DCFS or Department of Justice.
As the government shows up. Pardon? Does it really show up?
Well, it will for a while. I guess I'm used to it. It's not very helpful to know if they're impaired and so forth, but I guess you're looking, it doesn't last real long. I don't remember how long it lasts.
Well, they're usually ordered every other day or 5 days a week, or, you know, they have a specific time frame that they have to come in on a weekly basis.
And it's random for them, so they don't know when they're going to be told they have to come.
So these can be duplicated individuals.
Or they are duplicated.
It's one individual coming five times a week or one time a week, depending on how the court has ordered it.
And I believe it's for like Department of Corrections, for instance, if they're in that program, they're coming every day.
Probation and Corrections.
Mm-hmm. So.
So all the forensics are court ordered?
Yes.
Will we get reimbursed by state?
Yes.
Covers our cost?
Yes. Does it?
Does it? We at least write it in?
I'm assuming it does, because it's been successful, and we have been doing it.
Yeah.
And I know.
We're still doing it.
It has. And I know Department of Corrections has had success with some of their clients graduating from their program. The drug court, yeah.
Other questions? Thank you. Sydney?
Thank you, Chairman. I just have a few updates. First of all, I'd like to introduce Dan Long, our Health Population Project Manager. She wasn't here last month when you met. So she started up in August, and we're happy to have her on board, taking a look at a lot of our grant programs and evaluation of those programs. Last week, the Children and Family Services had a Blue Ribbon Anthology. I left a handout, a program handout. I just wanted to showcase that our own Rita Damian participated in this. This was a film clip training for training the protective factors and framework to prevent child abuse and neglect. It was held last week. And not only Dr. Damian was part of the cast, as herself, as the CAC medical provider, but also she participated in writing the script for the film clip. So it was a wonderful presentation to the community. In environmental, they're working on updating the ordinance for Chapter 16, and it's due to the state merger, which consolidated those state administrative codes. An update that we had, our lab manager has resigned, and so we'll be seeking replacement. That was Megan Johnson. We have an active TB case, and with 26 contacts that we've been testing, and we'll probably be treating about 8 individuals related to the original case. Our Family Planning Reproductive Health Grant was renewed through the state, which we're very happy to have. Betsy had mentioned about the Narcan grant. We have distributed 358 kits to date in the community, and as Betsy mentioned, they're doing trainers at this time. Stacy Wyans will be working diligently on coordinating the reaccreditation for the Health Department next August. We will be pushing the button, the go button again for reaccreditation, but between now and then is all the preparation work that will occur. And we have, for staff openings, we have one home visitor, an administrative assistant with our HUD program with the new startup grant, and a school nurse position. And that's it. Thank you.
Questions?
Just on the Narcan distributed, that's distributed from you, because you can also get it from AIDS Resource Center. Mm-hmm. Those numbers aren't, you didn't give it to AIDS
Not
Resource
the community,
Center.
So, just, right, just our, you. Through our program, through our grant program, yes. Thanks for that clarification.
I just wanted to be clear.
Yep, thank you.
Okay, I'm assuming we don't have a Corporation Council report. Any other business? Okay, entertain a motion to adjourn.
To adjourn.
Great, thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Good evening.
We are getting beat up on Facebook today.
Are we?
Like as I said.
I have a mouth with one friend, so I don't have anything else.
Yeah, I have any fingers.
So I'm killing that head.
You are eagle and
bird. But our article in the paper on Friday was taking the whole thing.
So you are able to look those several points.
One piece of government.
Diane, you made your parents.
So if you want to know, she's on the site. And then you go to the article, then you'll show the Facebook post on it after that. Not a lot of news language.
Well, I don't know anything about Facebook, so I guess I didn't realize you could sort of block it.
Right.
It occurred to me.